Hey everybody, welcome to our first episode of Fangs and Fonts. Happy to have you here. And if you're listening in retroly because you just caught onto the show halfway through the season, welcome to the beginning. We're happy to have you. My name is Ocean. I'm a purple Tigrox. And although I have nothing published at the moment, I'm currently working on that, and I've edited probably some stories you've read. I'm still a novice writer, but I'm working my way up. Next to me is...
Voice. I am a spider wolf. I am a published writer. Half my work is under Voice, but it's pretty much all done under Tarl. You can find me in many, many places. I have work published under Fur Planet's Will of the Alpha. And I have works published outside of it. Best way to do it is find my Voice Spider Twitter account and go from there.
And our third host is...
I am Roland, the Ferret. I am not quite yet a published author. I am set to have some works done in Roar and Fang. I am also currently working on the Anthology of Punked Anthology with editors Voice and Ocean. And that should hopefully be out sometime in the next year, at least.
So we're a collection of different authors at, well, I guess not we're all authors. We're a collection of writers. We're a collection of writers at all different stages in our writing career. And we've decided that we want more voice out there.
I see what you did there.
We felt that... amongst ourselves, we've got our little writing group, and we want to share our knowledge and our discussions for you out there so that as we're learning and improving ourselves, you guys can also learn, and we can all work together and create a great community. And so that's our purpose of this podcast.
Just basically building community and sharing our own trials and tribulations, because as Ocean said, we are at different levels, so there's a good chance that there's you guys out there are at least at one of our levels writing-wise, and can relate to at least what one of us is going through.
We'll be mostly talking about different aspects of writing and authoring, from publication to editing to just starting that story. And
we are not strictly a furry writing podcast. We're actually just a writing podcast, but because we all just happen to be furries, we'll be touching on base on that on a couple points, because it's hard for us being so immersed in the fandom that we can't just leave it out.
So we want this to be a bit of a community project as well. We want to bring you guys in on this show as much as we can. Now, obviously, we can't all record us all over because we would talk and be annoying and horrible and no one would hear anything. But we do have an email and we do have a Twitter account. It's Fangs and Fonts. That's the title of the show, no spaces, for our Twitter account. And the same is fangsandfonts@gmail.com. Please send us your feedback. Send us anything you want to know about the show. And we'll do our best to incorporate that and reply back to you. So being as we're... all both writers and furries, and this podcast, although not directly furry, but will probably have a large influence on it, we felt that our first episode should be an important topic that us as furry writers have all the time, and that is, what is the difference between an actual furry story and just another story with humans with fur? Roland, I'm not sure, have you written non-furry fiction?
None that's been published, no.
Okay, but you have written...
I have, mostly in the form of bad fan fiction when I was about 14 years old, but mostly any of my serious writing has been done as anthropomorphic submissions to the furry fandom.
Now myself, most of my writing has been done as non-furry, and now that I'm getting back into my writing, I'm looking more into furry writing. And Voice, you've been doing kind of a combination of both.
And yes, I do both.
Okay.
And I am... published. Yay!
But we've all read our share of furry stories, and there's definitely a difference between actual furry characters and other characters that I like to reference as non-human or human characters with fur. They act and talk just as if they were a normal character. They don't seem to have relation to their species or the fact that they have fur covering themselves.
And we are differentiating between characters that have anthropomorphic animals versus werewolves, werecats, that kind of deal. Because that's a whole different thing.
Where does that come in? Where's the line on that?
I think it was like the mysticism of it, because you'll notice that if someone's writing a character... So say you have a story that is
they were built as war machines. You have tiger soldiers and blah, blah, blah. Versus a werewolf story, you're going to have, with the tiger story, you know, they're bred for war. They act human / tigery, but mostly everything's in context of humans. Whereas in with werewolves, it's the beast within. It's they're combating it. They feel it beneath their skin. It's a completely different dynamic, just storytelling wise. When they transform, they're not behaving as I'm a person who is also an anthropomorphic wolf. They're behaving as a human who has these primal urges that they've got to get out.
Would the difference almost be that, in this example, the tiger soldier has always been a tiger anthropomorph? Well, in the werewolf,
yeah,
the person is a human. I'm not sure what, depending on what your story is, the human could have some of those urges inside, or until the transformation. Mm-hmm. Then they become a completely different character, really.
Well, that's the thing that werewolves have always been about, is that it's kind of a mirror of puberty. So it's very much they have these deep urges, these animalistic urges. They let it out, be it through anger or whatever. But when they turn into a werecreature, they're not behaving so much as I'm an animal person, as in I'm this personification / avatar of all these deep-seated animalistic urges, be it rage, lust, so on and so forth, depending on the story. And thus it kind of diverges them away from, hi, I'm an animal person, I've always been an animal person. Mm-hmm.
They have to act differently as a human and as a werewolf. Yeah.
When you get into turning people into characters like werewolves, it's a lot more about a human being the beast as opposed to the beast being a human.
There mm-hmm. we go.
And you have to focus more on what makes a beast human when you're talking about anthropomorphic characters, and what makes the human beastly when you're talking about werewolves and the like.
So, for example, one of the main things that a furry character is going to have is that they're going to have things like hypersensitive senses. They're going to be able to smell a lot better than we're going to be able to smell. They're going to hear a lot better than we're going to hear. You're going to this opens whole new worlds to the character in the way that they're experiencing their life. Like, you'll go down the street and maybe you'll hear some birds chirping, but you probably won't be hearing things happening 3 blocks away, or you won't smell what the person in the house beside you is cooking in the oven.
Well, that's one of the things that's usually brought up, is you can either choose to go that route, or you can go the route of they have human-based senses. But if you go the route of human-based senses, then really you're taking it and turning it into just a window dressing. It's...
That didn't work at all.
Sorry, I tried.
You basically have, here's this character who is essentially a human being. We're going to drape this thing of fur over them. Look, I've created a furry character. Whereas in, if you do hyperactive senses and all that, then you are actually taking it and it's becoming more so. As I brought up in talks that aren't on the podcast, basically, like any good genre, if you are truly writing well, it should be to the point where if you took that out, the story shouldn't work. Mm-hmm. That's what makes a genre a true genre. You know, you take steampunk out of a steampunk story, a lot of things aren't going to work in that story.
Otherwise, it wasn't a
steampunk
story.
Ideally, your entire world shouldn't work.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. With furry, you should be able to take... If you take the furry out of it, I mean, to some degree, your story is still going to work because they're still humanistic characters. Because it's like taking a sci-fi story and taking the aliens out of it. If you have a bunch of alien races, it's still...
You just have the most boring episode of Star Trek.
Exactly.
Picard gets angry at the crew.
Kirk is trapped on a planet fighting against some other race of people.
They go back home and nobody cares.
So we were talking about enhanced senses, but the other side of that whole thing is the detriment of senses.
Yeah, well, different animals don't have the same sight we do. Like, dogs are colorblind, and What are some other senses that you get?
Moles.
Color blindness, yeah. Sight, smell.
You have things like bats, which
just because you're an animal doesn't mean that you have human senses plus more. Now, that doesn't mean you can limit. You can, of course, say your characters have that, but you can also go into the world and use that to enhance your character and give them even detriments.
I think that if you're even going to consider giving them the benefits of animalistic traits, that you should also consider what makes them, you know, the detriments that make them their animal counterpart.
It's like superheroes, you know.
It'd be like if Superman wasn't vulnerable to kryptonite.
Yeah, exactly. Which, even though in the later ones, he kind of gets less vulnerable. Okay. Let's not go into Superman lore.
We're getting into Mary Sue territory.
Exactly.
We could go into so many of like the alternate realities of Marvel and DC.
But yeah, if there's a superhero and they don't really have a weakness, they're not only are their stories kind of boring, it's just pointless. So he saves the day. Well, of course he was going to save the day.
Like,
there's no conflict, there's no story.
Like, this is speaking now as an somewhat experienced writer, but I don't know why people decide to write this tragically perfect character because it's just so boring.
Self-insertion.
There's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with this character.
But that's for another podcast
on our list.
Did you guys read the small article I sent you on the comic book writing?
Yes.
And how they're like, tragic and angst automatically means conflict and
good
story. It's like, no.
That's another topic.
Exactly. Yeah. Tune in next time, kids.
Detrimental animal abilities.
It still plays into giving your characters the weaknesses of their species as well.
Yeah, and when you think about it, depending on how your world is, if you have very varied amount of species in your world, or just like two, say you've got dogs and cats, a large portion of that will be something like color blindness, and that will affect your world.
Actually, something that I just thought of, I believe... And someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but cats have serious issues when things are close to their face. They have problems locating it. That's why
you'll
notice
they will, in fact, freak the fuck out if you put your hand in their face.
Well, yes. But the thing is, though, is like if you watch a cat drink, a lot of cats will put their paw into like water because they can't.
They want to make sure it's there before they.
Well, they can't figure out where it is. They have to find out where. It's the same thing for like if you ever watch. Not that you're gonna see pigeon furs, but. They have no stereoscopic vision, so they've got to turn their head, look, and then they'll peck.
Oh.
I want someone to write a pigeon
into their
story.
Yeah.
Well, and they'll miss, too, because they... Because
can a bird really look straight at you?
No.
No.
Also, my grandfather raised pigeons, so that's why this example.
Any note to any colorblind writers out there, we'd love to hear some great dog stories from you, because I think you guys probably have the greatest view on that one.
And it's... It can be a great means of conflict that isn't just relationship issues. I mean...
Look, it can give more personality to your character.
Yeah.
But I mean, the thing is...
They're dating someone else who has full color spectrum. And the female with the full color is like, how does this dress? And they're like, it looked like the last three. No, they're complete different colors.
But then
you know nothing. Slap.
There's also, as Roland was saying earlier, which I think is the point you're getting to... where you can have, if you have two domineering species, they can have completely different traits, both good and bad, which is actually having them conflicting with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you end up... It'd be interesting to see someone actually write into the story how the different animal traits affect things like industrialism, like being able to make cars, being able to...
Yeah, they can
operate machinery...
Which just leads us into thing like, remember that they're not humans. Again, they have long ears that hats aren't going to fit. They have tails. If anyone here has worn a tail, if you've worn that for a day, you know how much effort it is to not sit on not catch it indoors, to get annoyed at people who are following around trying to grab it.
Avoid anime cons.
Yeah.
Things like muzzles and drinking from a glass of water. Give your dog a glass of water. It's not an easy thing for them to drink of it because they can't curl their tongue backwards properly when they take a drink.
Also, there's your kissing example, Roland.
Yes, the kissing example. You've essentially got the externalized version of a French kiss where you can't actually press your mouths against each other the same way that you would as a human. So you essentially get these two tongues lapping at each other.
Imagine cross-species kissing, like a feline with a short muzzle and a canine.
The thing that always confuses me is things like avians, like birds kissing, period.
Their beck beak just... Versus, oh, John, oh, Mary. Well,
I think that's called regurgitation. I think for birds, it's regurgitation.
if you've ever looked into the mouth of a bird and just seen their tongue, like, budgie could you tongue. Imagine?
Budgie tongues are awesome.
What about snakes? Do they just...
Well, that's like smelling
each
other.
Do they just do, like, kind of like hand slapping with tongues? The sweetest of kisses.
I don't know. It almost that would be more like an Eskimo kiss.
Oh, there we go.
Because you've got the whole Eskimo kiss where you rub your noses, so you're essentially smelling each other, which isn't creepy at all.
I had a point. Birds in a furry world. Anthropomorphization. Things like, you really have to think it out, because giving them angelic wings... I mean, I'm going to use the term loosely here in quotations, you know, realistically, the human torso does not have enough musculature in there to make that viable.
And you're meaning wings out the back,
out
and
they
the still
back,
have arms.
They still have arms. The best anthropomorphization of a avian I've ever seen is Kung Fu Panda the crane, because he still can fly, he's smaller than everyone else, he's thinner than everyone else, but he still has hands because he still has his claws and he still uses them as dexterous fingers.
He just uses his feet as hands, right? As if he had no arms. But he can still use his wings to hit things.
But I don't think he actually does all that often. I think he's more, I can fly.
I think he mostly uses his legs and his beak. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, for a human to realistically fly, they'd have to weigh a fraction of what they normally do. You can't just throw wings on a bird that weighs 200 pounds. It won't work. You can't generate enough lift, so...
Look at me! Consider what cardboard wings!
Icarus is not a real story, kids!
Yeah, consider what the actual physical limitations of your character are when giving them wings, or deciding if they can fly. And if they have wings for aesthetic value, why the fuck do they have wings?
And again, this is the difference between writing a furry story where it's literally either people that you furryized versus actually writing a furry story where if you took it out, it really doesn't work anymore.
Now, at the same time, you don't have to go to the extreme lengths. Like, I have to go and describe to you this glass that they are drinking out of so that you understand that they are a dog and they're not using it like a normal human, but they are still using this glass in some sort of way.
But it's easy enough to be like, they gave me a bowl of water. I cupped it up to my face. But,
my suspension of disbelief is strong enough to believe that someone who has refined human features in an animal body can pick up a glass and...
They've discovered some way to pour it into their muzzle.
You can decide to make your furry characters drink from a bowl, but that is your decision.
Can
I
they
don't
use
think
straws?
It,
that was what I wanted to ask. I imagine they could.
Can dogs use
the question isn't can dogs? Is it can anthropomorphized dogs
use straws?
Yes.
Well, do they they have lip muscles? The answer is probably yes. So you can wrap your muzzle around a straw. Sorry. Press your tongue, which is by all means large enough, up to the roof of your muzzle, and then inhale. It does work. It could work.
Well, at the same time, I'm sure someone's like, we've all written characters. We all have written characters that are furry, that are smoking. I'm pretty sure if they can smoke, they can use a straw.
Yep.
Good point.
Sure, too.
I've been writing a lot of furs that smoke, actually.
I've only read the one.
Oh, did he do it in his last one, too? Yeah.
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 I did it in...
He did it in Cthulhu. The first thing he does is as soon as he goes out, his pulls out, and you even go into the cigarettes and that. But we're going to
get edgy! Edgy!
And then he gives the human cigarettes.
Smoking
makes like,
him
real
goddamn
tobacco!
Boxes! I like he's going to steal my box!
Smoking makes him feel alive. Also consider the effect that smoking has on a heightened sense of smell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you get wasted faster. Well, not wasted.
Well, no. Like, think about it. You wouldn't be able to smell as much. If you constantly smoked, your sense of smell is...
In the same way that smokers lose that kind of taste.
Much like the werewolf in Hotel Transylvania. He's done changed so many diapers that he's lost his sense of smell completely.
Well, at the same time, us as humans, we start to lose our sensitive... I can't remember the technical term, but say I have smelly feet. I don't really, people. I wash my feet, but
as should you.
But I could come down, sit on the couch, you'd be like, "Ah, your feet smell disgusting." 2 minutes later, you will forget that they smell because your body is now used to it.
Right. One thing we also talked about is, I don't know.
This is also how I eat chicken wings, because the first two chicken wings are delicious, and then after that, you're just gorging.
Did we get the Febreze thing on this one?
No.
For things like Febreze.
Mark!
Walking into a room when there's a bunch of people in a room, you're going to end up picking up a lot of, as a furry, you're going to pick up a lot of the enhanced smells. You're going to be able to tell who's in estrus. You're going to tell who's had sex with who.
Did not shower today. Oh, yeah. God. He really went to the gym. I can still smell
but
it.
But if you also consider that, actually, furry characters also just have more natural smell to them.
Also, animals sweat differently than people do. Dogs sweat through their nose and their paw pads. They don't actually have sweat glands. Foxes, however, with their musk glands. Rodents with their glands.
Ferrets.
And ferrets. I was going to rubbing their testicles on the carpet.
Oh, God, you're not allowed over in my house anymore.
No, not ferrets. It's rats.
Oh,
rats.
Okay.
It's too late.
You can stick around.
It's too late. He's rubbed his testicles all over the carpet.
But at the same time, you can't not have a convention center because there will be 500 and no one will be able to stand the smell.
And the thing is you can't use maskers like Febreze because
it's just as invasive.
Right. You have people who have issues as humans with Febreze giving your enhanced smell. If someone sprayed you with that, you're kind of not good.
The only other actual alternative that I've seen someone offer to things like showering is the powdered scents. Something that might be a little less potent than something like Febreze, but still allows the character to freshen up, per se.
Well, I mean, it would be like a chinchilla dust bowl. They go into a bowl, they cover themselves in dust.
It's a mask.
Roll around, and it's like before showering was popular, when they had the talcum body. Well, no, you had like a talcum powder kind of deal. I actually found one online. It's one that's way back, and it's still around. And literally, it's just a body scent thing, and you rub it on yourself, and it cleans, quotation marks, but you don't stink because it basically absorbs your body oil and it basically.
Didn't they do the same thing with ash or something?
Kind of, yeah.
I can't remember.
Well, usually ash is a basis to anything that we use to mask scent.
But an interesting point you brought up is that, you know, we have to remember that animals don't sweat like we do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing, and where we're not making human characters with fur, is another thing that emotions are completely different with animals. Animals do blush. Some animals do, but you cannot see it because of the fur.
Yes.
So we have to rely on things like ears, or, you know, some dogs can kind of smile. You can kind of get a grin going on, but
they look so cute when they do it.
Dogs are always happy, it seems.
Or sad.
Cats, on the other
or
hand.
Or really angry.
But, yeah, no, that's the, well, it's like the George Carlin thing where it's like, dogs have eyebrows. They can emote with their eyebrows. Cats just have a bunch of shit sticking out of their head.
Cats just hate everybody. So
exactly. Well, usually with cats, it's their tail language is actually what gets through.
Yeah, tails.
If anyone who's got a cat, or if you know someone who has a cat, watch their cat. Watch, you know, when it's pissed off, that tail starts going pretty damn quick.
And when they like you, that tail starts to curl around your arm, or
it's really, or usually it'll just be the tip that's just kind of doing that slow, sinuous.
And the only things that their ears are really used for is when they're being aggressive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So their ears are back, their fangs are bared, and that's pretty much the only reason they have to do that is to let you know that they're pissed off.
That's actually on that topic, the whole fang things. You guys, like, people have, when you're writing a furry character, smiling with your teeth, generally in the animal kingdom, is not looked upon well.
It's an act of aggression, pretty much.
Yeah, you're
burying gorillas
fangs.
That have been taught how to smile, when put into a pen with gorillas who weren't, will get attacked and mauled because it's a sign of aggression, despite the fact it's being taught that this is a human thing, they can smile. gorillas who haven't been taught this look at and go, you're baring your fangs at me, it's a sign of aggression, I'm going to now kick your ass.
But in an anthropomorphized world, would that become a human trait that they're...
That's one of the things you're going to have to... Is it, or is it totally...
People, humans smile, so if they're human
characters. Civilization could totally evolve to a point where smiling isn't common. Mm-hmm. It's not. It's just not a thing.
Or it could just be like a polite society thing where when you smile, it's polite to not show your canines. Mm-hmm. You can smile, show your lower teeth, but like as if you were panting, but... To show all your teeth is viewed as a social faux pas.
You really could make it as just, it's one of the most backhanded things you could ever do is to smile at someone with your canines.
It's almost like a smirk. Kind of like,
Almost like a really suggestive fuck you.
Yeah.
Like, because if society's reached the point where smiling with your canines is untowards someone, that... Smiling with your canines really is just a saying, I want you dead, in fewer words.
I like the subtle fuck you statement. That actually, as soon as you said it, I was like, that'd be...
That could work really well, but...
There's a couple stories where...
You will have to seriously establish this in your story if you intend to use it as a plot device.
Don't just say it and assume everyone knows what's going on.
And if you're going to put it in your story, make sure you stick with it. That it's not just, I'm going to throw this in here because this is great. And then ignore it for the rest of the story. I forget what the rule is. But basically, if you have it in the first few pages, it better still be relevant in the later pages. If you're a guy, if it's bad to smile with your teeth, you better not be doing it later on the story unless that's what you intend.
If you feel it's important enough to bring up, you'd better damn well keep it in there.
Because this will open up a can of worms in another episode.
how to frustrate your editor.
Yeah.
101.
Flip table. But this is a question that I still struggle with. Like, can animals smile? Is it, like, I've seen smile, but... How much facial expressions can they actually show?
Is it really a smile, or is it they're just panting?
Can birds, like a beak can't really move? You have animations where they force the beak to move, but to me, on your writing style, what are they saying? How are they smiling?
I had a lovebird, and I was trying to think of what when she was happy, what was she doing?
That's exactly screeching. What I was just thinking. Screeching. What do birds do to happy? Because they don't have
ears. They chirp and screech and chirp and screech.
But in an anthropomorphized world, are they just going to be, I'm happy, I'm happy, I'm happy. Hey, are you happy? Because I'm happy. I hear tacos. Tacos are delicious.
Maybe their emotions are just based entirely off of how far their beak is open.
This bird is making pasta.
How
does a bird show disgust?
Right, but do you give...
Then you'd have to choose ones like cockatiels where...
They've got
the crest. But even, like, if you watch them, it's really hard to gauge what they're doing. Because there would be points where, I'm happy, but my crest is down, so you have no idea what I'm doing.
I think a few things I've done is they've, like, clicked their beak in, like, snide remarks. Or, I guess, tail feathers you can use, too.
Tail feathers. The other thing is that emotions are heavily conveyed in things like eyebrow movements. Mm-hmm. So do you give these characters the ability to twitch their eyes, or are they just essentially completely...
Do birds have eyebrows?
Well, I mean, there's...
I don't think they do.
But can you give a bird eyebrows?
You can.
I mean, there is...
It is possible.
I want to see this picture now, but you got these furry marks, this eyebrows.
Beyond avians.
Marks, not Marcus.
Beyond avians.
Yeah.
You have your standard things for... I mean, most furry stories have your popular species, your dogs, your cats, and so you end up having these ways of conveying it. We all know when a dog's scared, concerned, whatever, its ears go down.
And its tail is...
That's the thing I don't see a lot of people doing. I see one or two writers conveying it, but where the tail bumps the back of the legs because it's trying to go between the legs. It's, you know, it's drawing close to the body. Whiskers. I don't see a lot of people doing things with whiskers.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you're inquisitive, especially if you're a cat, your whiskers are going to move forward because you have no depth perception in the front of your face. So you're going to have things like your ears flashing up or down or however the hell they're going. You know, if you're trying to, if you're curious about something, if you don't know where it is, your ears are going to continually be rotating. Things like that. I mean, there's universal through most mammal species. Once you get away from that, like things like reptiles and avians, and you're going to have a
fish,
lot
dolphins.
More.
Dolphins. Yeah. Those are other ones we haven't discussed.
You're going to have a lot more.
I honestly, like, as far as writing about aquatic animals like dolphins.
Is it almost better they stay in the sea?
I would think
or
so.
Or on the beach at the very
least. I couldn't ever imagine riding a shark on land. I mean,
like, again, I've seen art where people have taken a shark and given it legs, and you're like, it looks fine, but riding it, I think, is probably a bit of a challenge.
It's riders really get the shit under the stick on that one, because we have to make
whatever we write believable. Lines.
It's completely okay for a cartoon to be unrealistic and to just throw caution to the wind when it comes to logic or reasoning. If you wrote a shark on land and that shark is interacting with everyone, you have a better of a damn good reason as to why that whole thing is happening, like how that even came to be.
One of the things that I don't think we caught, reptiles. If you're going to write reptiles into your story, understand that reptiles are completely different than mammals. Reptiles are cold-blooded. You're going to have to factor that in.
A reptile in a snow environment is probably not going to be moving.
They don't really have ears.
But generally with reptiles, you got to, I mean, much like avians, as we were discussing, you've really got to watch the things you're doing. Things like, you're doing a bear character, ursines, and it's winter. Have they evolved past hibernation, or do they still hibernate? Mm-hmm. Things like this, you kind of got to take into context. I will find a story far more interesting world building wise if you incorporate things like this. If it's just humans with fur, there's no reason why you're writing a furry story. You might as well just try to get published under one of the umpteenth million publishers out there who will take human stories and be happy with it. What makes and I've said this before, people like Kyle Gold, there's a reason that they are as popular, and in that regards, it's, you know, I've read some of his early stuff versus his later stuff. In his later stuff, you get a lot more of, you have a character who is a wolf, he's smell-based, he's pack-based, it's very much, this is not a human boy, this is a character who has grown up being a wolf, being raised in a family of wolves. Same with the otter. I'm referring to Green Fairy with this. The otter family, their way of living is completely and utterly different than everyone else's. Their house has pools of water in it because otters and water and slides and all that kind of thing. And it works really well. And there's a reason he's as popular as
See,
he is.
The interesting thing I find out about the otters having their pool mansion, essentially, is just that. The fact that this is their natural habitat doesn't change the fact that this house has to cost so much money. They have a pool Yes. built into their house, which they have to clean, maintain. Any, like, structural foundations don't just last forever. They have to repair anything that breaks, the filters that go into that.
To a degree, though, yes, I see where you're coming, but you also have to, in that point, you require, basically, they've evolved for so long that this is taken into account.
Right, but the thing is that it doesn't prevent that stuff from costing a shit ton of money.
No, that's true. Unless you end up having, like, the parents meet, and this, like, and literally having one of those, like, side conversations where, like, the kids are hanging out, and the parents are like, how did you guys afford your house? Like, ours is, you know, such 20th century.
We have a kitty.
Oh, we're long the lottery. Yeah. And it's like, how do you, it's like, this can't be cheap, you know? And it's like, oh, well, I got a deal from here. Or, you know, it's one of those little slice of life things.
No. Stop. It's like, oh, I just got a deal on this great mansion.
They were just giving them away.
I get what you're saying.
Okay. Yes.
But my God.
A little bit too past suspension for disbelief.
just the whole, it's, that's the other way to enhance your furry story, is just to have these little slice of life moments where we as human beings, when we have them, take them for granted because they happen around us constantly. Sit at Starbucks, listen to the conversations around you. Imagine if they were furries of different species and what they would be talking about. What do you know? What kind of problems would parents that bring their little kids to a Starbucks meet have in regards to their kids of differing species? What happens when the porcupine mother's porcupine baby is developing its quills? That can't be pleasant. What happens, you know?
Or what happens when the porcupine gives birth and it's a cougar? Or, then there's some dramatic tension about to start.
Your rambunctious porcupine child stabs the the skunk kid that's also been playing with him, so he just sprays the whole fucking store.
Well, but there you go. What's the first time that the skunk baby glands have evolved to the point where suddenly it has its first accidental, I don't know why I put that in quotations with my fingers, but first accidental.
Oh yeah, yeah, suddenly he's, you know, the smelly butt at the school. Yeah. Smelly butt, and now he's like a horrible, the emo, well, makeup is coming down.
They're also wearing pants. This
is a slight Patton Oswalt reference to anyone.
He becomes, I can't say it.
Actually, but, consider, they're also wearing pants, so the first...
Are they wearing pants? Or did you put them with pants?
Well, they're probably wearing pants. I mean,
sometimes I like to write stories where I just don't describe them with pants because it's all.
But here's the thing, though. Yes, they have fur. However, if they're male, they still have penis and testicles hanging out there for everyone to see.
But is that normal?
Yeah, is that normal? Like the equivalent of a nudist colony.
When I was reading your story, in fact, it was about It compliments on how.
Yeah,
casual. Exactly. A naked character would have been if he'd not been shaven bald.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it is normal, and maybe their animalistic instincts overrule the fact that we feel compelled to wear clothes for whatever reason, because we needed them for warmth. Yeah. We needed them for cover from the sun. We needed them for a lot of things.
Because, and then they turned into fashion.
We didn't have those natural defenses, so animals shed. Animals have fur to prevent them from getting sunburned. Where we needed clothes for a number of reasons, from being warm to keeping cover under the sun to
protection
from other humans, etc., etc. So we just sort of, we provided our own need for clothes, so that is pretty much why we wear clothes. There's not exactly that need when it comes to
the animal,
to a furry world.
That's more the human side of it.
I mean, species might be a little more regional, but for the most part, animals have fur to protect themselves from the sun. They grow in thicker coats in the winter, so they don't need winter jackets or anything like that.
Or their fur even changes during the
season. So it's entirely plausible that a furry world just has completely naked characters.
Question.
Yes.
Head fur or no head fur?
Oh, this is a one we've had a lot of discussion. Because you look right behind you, I think people listening won't be able to see this picture, but that's a classic example of one or the other right there.
Yeah, but it looks like you have head fur.
Kind of. You want to look in another. That has a Batman.
You look like
mask.
Batman.
That's the point.
I just think it's really going to depend
Goddamn Batman.
Sorry. I think it's just really going to be dependent on how particular you want to be, but keep it consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If your characters have head fur, they all have head fur.
Mm-hmm.
At least they
should. Well, that was the thing that really shocked me with...
Let's specify. There's fur on the head, and then there is head fur, or is then there their hair?
Well, people call it hair fur to differentiate it from the body fur.
I also
really
don't agree with adding fur to, like, hair fur. Is it fur?
Just say it's hair.
Yeah.
But this...
Otherwise, it's fur that is turned into
but
hair.
But see, now this is going into somewhere else. Because I, when I did my story for Willow the Alpha, one of the things that was brought up is that I had hands everywhere in my story. And it was brought up that there are actually people who, that's a no-no. They need to be paws.
Can they have hands? Can you call their paws hands? Are their paws
Well, now I call them paws. They have fingers. They have paws.
They have digits.
The only problem
I always reference them as digits.
The only times I've ever come across issues is when it's feet paws. Because I hate feet paws.
They're still paws.
Right. They are still paws, and they're still, in fact, feet, believe it or
so
not.
So I just call them feet. So, but I mean that different, why can't I call hands?
Why can't you call them hands?
I think they would be...
It's personal preference.
I think they would be paws, like hands would be paws, if your character still walked on all fours. What I think makes our hands hands, when you're talking like turning them into an anthropomorphic creature, is that they
have an opposable thumb.
Well,
opposable thumbs.
No.
I have an argument point to that.
Okay.
Take rats. Rats and mice.
Because they
have hands.
Come.
They don't have opposable thumbs, but they have hands. They don't have paws.
Or at least grab stuff?
When people, yeah, like squirrels. Squirrels have hands.
Raccoons.
So, raccoons have hands. So what differentiates their hands from paws? Is it because they can grasp things even without an opposable thumb?
I know at the
it
same time.
It could even be their ability to walk on two legs.
Yeah. At the same time, when you look at other animals like reptiles or horses, is definitely one we've looked into. What is a, like, how do you turn a clop? A clop. A hoof. I'm not cloppy on this show. We are hoofing.
Well, when I've done it, is I've given them less fingers for one. So they only have three fingers.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Or giving them Vulcan, live long and prosper. But I always reference that their fingers are coated in...
The keratin?
Yes.
Yeah, I know, Roland, you did the same thing.
Yeah, it was the best compromise I could come up with. I still don't know.
Well, also, what it usually ends up coming down to is compromises.
This is a question I have for you. Are paws furry? Can a crocodile have paws, or do they have claws? Or do they have claws on paws?
Well, see, that's the same thing when it comes to when I'm doing a horse character. Mm-hmm. When it comes to their... hands, it's
what
you,
do you
can't
call it?
Refer them as paws. They're
hoofs or hooves. Sorry,
hooves. But then even then, they're not really hooves
because they now have digits. But yeah,
I don't know. I don't think it's unreasonable to say that a character that stands on two legs and uses their
opposable
digits, their hands, their paws to do tasks that are normally completed by a human being, I don't think it's unreasonable to call them hands or paws.
I think in the end it's more personal preference, much like like head hair.
If you submit a story to an anthology, and the do you think just because you called them hands or paws, is the lead editor actually going to reject you on that, or are they just going to say please change all of these?
Well, if you've been accepted, well, you'll generally be, can you please accept this? In my case, that's what it was. Eye color is actually another one.
Oh, I would like to point out, I've looked up the definition of hand, which now, number one, the terminal prehensile part of the upper limb in humans and other primates, consisting of wrist, metacarpal area, fingers, and thumb. And then it goes on to say the corresponding part of the forelimb in any other of the higher vertebrae.
So, technically it's a hand.
So I think we can call them hands.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, argue with the dictionary.
Right. But you also might want to keep it consistent.
Take that, Webster.
For the, you know, if but in
yes,
terms you, of an anthology, you could reasonably ask someone to use paws if that is the... If that is
how
they're
going
to
But if my character is a
it.
Story of lizards, are you going to get mad that I call them paws? Or, like, I don't want to call them paws.
I'm sure context matters, but if they are a bipedal fox person and you're calling them hands and someone else has a bipedal fox person calling them paws, you choose one or the other.
I think it's a personal choice.
I will point out that digits is acceptable on any type of life form.
Yes. Mostly.
I prefer it over fingers.
Unless they just have, like, one big amorphous blob for a hand.
But then they don't actually have fingers or digits. They have a blob. So, in addition to things that we were talking about, like with skunks in the school and, you know, they're developing glands, or like you said, bears in winter, another thing that you can use is species for specific roles in your stories. They don't just have to be, this is a generic fox, and this is a generic dog, and this is a generic bird, and, you know, I just made them animals because I want the story to be furry.
Well, one of the prime examples of that I liked, look at Jane Eyler's work. In his Better Days... They represent
different
modern day
races,
cultural
right?
races,
yeah.
Whatever you want to call it.
Which is completely reasonable.
Yeah, and I actually rather like that because at least it's relating them to something that you see in the modern world around you. It's basically drawing parallels between the two. You don't have to do that, But at the same point, your wolves are going to end up filling a role, and it's best if you have something similar to that in the modern world that you can draw from.
Well, and it all really pays attention to where these animals actually come from. So the hyenas are the black people of his world. The mice, things like the mice, the cats, the dogs, the wolves all come from North America. So, I mean, that's they're pretty much a catch-all.
It's probably going to come from Australia.
Mice are the Jewish people, and I don't know if he has a specific race for Canadians, but they're all as well related to their country of origin.
Mm-hmm. Which is something else to keep in mind.
So it's, as opposed to modifying your world to accommodate for a furry existence, you are accommodating the furry existence for the sake of the world that you already live in.
Or in the reciprocal, if you want to develop your world that way, you can draw from that parts of the world to pick what sort of animals.
Right.
If I want to have an Australian exchange student in North America, I could make him a wallaby or a wolverine, you know.
But
something.
That's exactly what I mean, is that you can go completely the other way and write your furry characters to coincide with the world that already exists around you.
Yeah.
It gives you more choice than just going, hey, everyone likes cats, I love cats, I have dogs because I'm so used to them. And I think you guys do this as well. Occasionally you like to put in one type of animal that you never, ever see in stories, into your stories.
Well, it's just because I get sick of reading stories where it's foxes, wolves, coyotes, cats, otters, weasels.
My friend Nuka, if you know, he's the psychologist that's studying furries. One of his first, every time he does all the species, he looks at the top five, and they're always, I believe, foxes, huskies, cats, and big cats divided into two. And I can't remember the fifth off the top of my head. But if you just take that main four. Oh, wolves. Wolves. Because wolves and huskies are different. Like, those, I think, are the top five. And so you see that a lot in stories. Because those are the ones that people like. Those are the ones that most people relate to. And so it's nice when you can get that variety in.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just realized something we're going to have to answer for. Are Jay Naylor's characters furry? I don't think they are.
Well, they're the humanistic.
They're more human than anything, but think about Original Life. Think about Better Days. These characters aren't furry. There is nothing about them that makes them specifically a hyena. Cats, mice, they all really do just exist.
You could completely swap their species and nothing would change.
Correct.
It could just simply be the human only characters.
The only furry thing about them is their point of origin as far as characters are concerned. So that is also something important to consider if you are creating your characters around the world that already exists.
That's a good point. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I don't know if you guys can. If anyone thinks of anything,
it's why I brought it. It's why I brought it up. I can't think of a single reason why they're furry characters.
Like, they're delightful characters. I enjoy them, but under our criteria right now, we probably wouldn't consider them. They really are humans with fur.
Yeah. Wow.
You just blew our mind.
Point.
Mark.
Set and match. Well, marked done. For
you win this round, ferret.
I absolutely know someone's going to call us on that, so I figure we should address that point right now.
That's
definitely a point. Moving into the other species, in the story I just wrote recently for my Western, I actually used the species of herbivores and carnivores and their relationship to each other in the story. And it's another thing you have to think about in your world. What are they eating? Is everyone eating meat? Is it an acceptable diet? Do they have diets according to their food?
Do they have...
If they are a carnivore or an omnivore, where are they getting the meat from?
Yeah, what if you're eating a steak? I've actually criticized books that I've reviewed. When they sit down and they have a steak...
Where did that steak come from?
I mean,
poor Bessie. She was a great friend.
There's ways of doing it.
She's better with A1 sauce.
Kyle Gold has... species that evolved and species that didn't evolve. That's how he handles it. Other people just accept there's a stake.
Here's the thing, though. Is that ever specifically addressed in his stories?
No. It's something that people have asked him, and that's...
And that's where I draw the suspension of disbelief, because I think we can assume that if this character is eating a steak in a world where it is illegal, we'll say, to devour herbivores, if you're a carnivore, that we can safely assume that there is some sort of mass-produced meat product that is legal for sale and consumption.
I think it's just a matter of, without stating that, if you sit there and go, I sat down with Bob the Bull, I had a delicious steak, he had a delicious salad. As soon as you say steak because of we as humans, you're immediately steak equals cow.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you've previously stated that it's a meat substitute or a tofu steak.
Well, I love in 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, he's describing all these other food that they've turned from fish into normal day food. Like a steak is the equivalent of tuna.
Yeah.
Or they've used seaweed for a salad.
And that's the thing that people will call it the Madagascar factor, is that if you can't eat friggin' your everyday cattle, chickens, whatever, you can go to fish. There's no reason why the wolf at the table with the bull can't be having a tuna steak.
But what about all those poor sentient dolphins?
Yeah. They keep getting caught in the net, and then they just end up in
their own damn fault!
Don't worry, this one lost all its money on lottery tickets.
But I mean, that's the thing, is there's always going to be things that you're not going to evolve. If you're not going to evolve reptiles, or if reptiles are not a character, they could be eating reptiles. Alligator can be delicious. Same with avians. Same with fish.
You just have to make sure it's consistent. Yeah. And possibly let them know what's going on. I don't know. How far does suspension of disbelief work in that? Do you just assume?
It depends. I think it's...
Or do you glaze over?
It depends on the reader, I think, for one. Because I think...
Some people get really uppity about it.
I don't know. Do vegetarians get really, really angry at that? I don't know.
Well, it could actually breed like a whole new level of PETA. If you think about it.
Do a story about PETA. Why are you eating them?
But for the most part, I'm just willing to believe that any meat that a carnivore is eating has been raised, bred, and slaughtered for that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not going to explain in three paragraphs or less why this character is
And that's where it differs with me, is I want to know, at least in a sentence, where that steak came from. Or if you can't explain to me where that steak came from, use something else.
But
just have them later going by looking at the cattle fields.
But for something like that, is that an important thing to consider is what's sort of a given as far as explanation goes.
Yeah.
It's like you not explicitly explaining your Lovecraft lore. I mean, it's not essential information, but it is simply there as...
True.
As something to advance the story
forward. You've got me there.
So, yes.
Stop being on the ball for this podcast. So I can
never. I want to sound as smart as possible. And I still want good or better, whatever it was.
As I said, we're all... The stuff we write is all different when it comes to anthropomorphics. The stuff that Roland writes versus what Ocean writes, what I write, beyond our own separate genres, when we present a character or a situation, we all have different levels of what furry we're sticking into it. As Ocean said, you know, we like to stick in the odd different species. I like to play off of the normalcy of the furry world versus the normalcy of our world and how they differ.
Here's a question. Mm-hmm. This is a little bit into another topic for another day, but when you write another story, are you writing them all in a similar contained world, or... Or in one example, maybe there are feral animals in furry, and then in another, maybe they are all. Do you swap, or do you kind of stick? Like, it sounds like Kyle Gold sticks to that one.
It sounds like he's got his one
yeah,
out of position.
It's just all these stories in his world.
And then he's got his Vol world.
He has a few very specific worlds that he writes in.
For me, I do have a world where I've written more than one story. But I've also got, generally, as I'm writing it, I will come up with a place where it's like, okay, this world, insects are the food source. Insects are the mounts, the food source, and the pests. That's the other thing. If you have things like vermin, and you have mice and rats running around as people, what are your vermin? Most likely going to be insects, right? Mm. Something's
got humans.
If there's nothing that's there, something's got to fill that role. If you create an empty space, something's got to be there to take its place.
What about the differences between worlds where they're all continually furry, or ones where the half furry, half human living in cohabitation, which adds to like social status sometimes, or humans helped create them and they're better, or they're all living together, or even maybe the furries have enslaved the humans. There's so many different ways, but
yeah, it's that whole thing where you introduce humans into a furry world or vice versa. I have to honestly say that I'm becoming less and less of a fan of it as I read these stories.
And Angry Ferret Brant, go.
Yeah, I'll try to keep it as less of a rant and just more of a stern warning that the only conflict I ever see arise out of furries in a human world and vice versa is that they just can't fucking live with each other. And that is fine. It's a perfectly valid point of contention, but it is the only one I see.
It's always conflict, or it's a forbidden love?
I only ever see it as, it's forbidden, which it's completely valid because, yes, you have these two completely different species coexisting together.
It's kind of a trope.
That may not even be genetically compatible. Okay.
Let's not go into that. Suspension of disbelief.
But it's always, the humans are the aristocrats. Or the furries.
Aristocrats or aristocats? Point for us!
It's about freaking time!
You got me. So the humans are the aristocrats. They are the high life of society. And they look down on these furry characters, make them slaves, they oppress them and whatever. Or furries are the biological creation of humans. They are slaves, servants, they are their lessers. I rarely see the humans not being the oppressors. It seems to be a rare plot
point. Or the
point.
Upper class.
But even if you flip it around, it is still, you've still got the same scenario, except that it's not the big bad humans anymore. It's these puny little humans that are too weak to...
Plus, whenever I see where the humans are the lesser, usually... Almost like, 3 out of 5 times, the furries are aliens. And have come to Earth taken over with their technology. They didn't build it alongside the humans.
The only real excuse that I see to add humans into a furry story is to introduce them as the main antagonist. And I have issue with that. Because it was original once, it was original the second time. And it can still be written well, it's just I don't trust your ability to do so in the general sense. Like,
well, it just gets boring after a while.
Yeah.
Yet even still, there's movies and that being pumped out where that is still the case.
Like, it turns out the humans were evil all along. And, fuck it.
We're animal people. We know better about nature than you do.
Like, you can even add in a better thing where it's like, the furries are different than the humans because they're back to the more nature, they're more Mother Earth, almost shamanistic, but you're still going into the same trope.
I was going to say, I think that's another trope that exists.
Like, I'd like to see something where humans aren't just these big tyrannical, gluttonous beings that simply exists to add a point of contention in the story.
Stop trying to be political in your story. It's not working with furries. I don't know why, as you said, humans have to be in the story. Unless if it's a contemporary fiction piece, there don't need to be humans.
Maybe that's why, if it's science fiction,
fine, put the humans in there. But at that point, then you've got to figure out how it works. Either, yeah, like they're aliens and stuff like that. I'm trying to remember, there's a author who did a story where the quote-unquote furry characters were actually military experiments, so nothing new there. The only twist was is they had Frankensteins, which were actually genetically modified humans, making them beyond human. And the second book in the trilogy, it's about, because it starts off about a tiger detective bred to be a war machine, becomes a detective, but super flaws to the characters, and they're like, he's aging super fast. His lifespan's like 30 to 40 years. Then you've got this Frankenstein character in the second one, and the third one, some kind of prostitute rabbit, I think. And then the fourth book is about the tiger again in his old age.
But isn't what you just said contradictory? In the sense that all we see as humans is the conflict. But
in this regard, what's
happening... Or we could just write them without them. But is there a way that we can write them and not have them conflicting?
In this regard, they don't conflict. Because basically, the time streams happen enough to the point where because of the genetic modifieds and the fact that they are breeding, not so much the combat things like tigers, but things like the rats, which were scouts, have outbred all their flaws and are basically and everything's become overpopulated, so humans have had no choice. It's like superheroes. They have no choice but to live beside these beings.
They have changed the world now that you've lived in because the people are now here.
Because we have decades and decades of these things existing, so people, it's basically...
It's the story of the X-Men.
Yeah.
Please just accept us.
Yeah, and that's the thing, it's come to the point where they are accepted. A human and a furry being together, yeah, you're gonna have people who are like, oh, that's strange, no more so than the standard racism of today. You're always gonna have people who are racist,
and people will always be different,
right? So that's the thing, is they're just another species, and it's like, okay, but it's not unusual. But then you have to go into an explanation,
and you can add parts of racism in that, and
exactly.
Yeah. It's entirely possible, and in some cases recommended, to have humans interspersed with your furry world, but try to keep away from those tropes.
Because we're tired of reading them.
That's the only thing that I ask.
Look forward to this future podcast as well.
Editor podcast.
You have to realize that tropes are still building blocks, but they are not your story.
They're tropes. Like, there are instances where tropes are just completely okay because that's what they're supposed to be. If you're doing an Indiana Jones knockoff, then fine. I don't care.
Don't write me Indiana Jones in the end, though.
Don't write me Indiana Jones, but I mean, you are completely entitled to your tropes then. Not so much in a modern day story.
Enough stories about a herbivore dating a carnivore. We don't need more of those. There's enough of them out there. Give us something new. Come up with something original. The conflicts of a relationship between a herbivore and a carnivore are apparent. Great.
Forbidden love is a trope.
Yeah. We are getting really off topic here.
Yeah. Do you guys got any other points? Or are we leading to wrap this up?
I
boys?
Think that's it.
Rolling?
I think I'm good.
I think I'm good too. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that discussion. We'd love to hear your feedback.
May you be email. All the wiser for our banter.
So, if you guys want to hear anything from us, we'd like to hear your feedback, things you guys would like to hear us talk about, just send us an email.
Also, one of the things we would like to do on this podcast is the critiquing of short stories. So if you have anything, you understand that you must be okay with criticism if you were to send us in anything.
Especially sarcastic criticism.
Horribly sarcastic.
You entirely consent to our red pens of death if you send us a story. But under 5,000 words and not a PDF, please.
If it goes well, you could even get a video podcast of me acting it out. which, if you ask these two, is apparently quite enjoyable.
It is. Plus, we might end up doing the dialogue if the dialogue's not working. Yes. But yeah, we are completely up to... We won't do it every podcast, but we will look at some in some podcasts just so that we can...
We will go over it, tell you where you can improve, what you've done right.
We'd like to turn part of this podcast into interaction with you guys, and with that, we need you guys to send us things to interact with.
And don't... This isn't really a beta reading service. This is really only for novice writers only.
Beta readers is another topic for another day.
Mm-hmm. I mean, feel free. Either way.
Thanks again for listening, guys. I'm Ocean.
I'm Voice.
And I'm Roland.
And I will say something witty next podcast.